And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan in Jacksonville. Okay, we already have a call coming in, so let me jump to that right now, and then I'll get on to my topic. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Roy. Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm great, buddy. Thanks for your phone call.
Good. Hey, I talked to you last week. We were talking about diabetes type 2, and you'd mentioned that I needed to get an insulin test.
Yeah, it's called fasting insulin. Costs $14.
Yeah.
So you just show up to the laboratory without eating any breakfast or drinking coffee, and they'll measure the liver level.
Yeah. I did that, and I got my results back. I'm like at 8.5.
Yeah, that's too high.
Okay, and I think you had said I need to get on that two meals one day, one meal the next day, do that for 3 weeks and see if I've improved.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? That's what I need to do now?
Yeah, I mean, understand this, and hopefully I can say this the right way. You've got all this stuff going on, and I appreciate you so much for trying to take care of it yourself, but there's only so much I can do on the radio. And so what you can do is you can find out what your results, and there's other principles like, what do we do to reset all the insulin receptors? So these are valid points. What do we do to rejuvenate the pancreas and the liver? I kind of think personally, if I had to pick one organ that gets abused by insulin and blood sugar, it's got to be the liver. So there may be like a whole different topic about what do we do about the liver, but yeah, you're on the right track.
Okay. And as far as what I'm eating, just do my my smart eating on these two meals.
Well, if you eat, if you stick with meat and vegetables, you're going to just do the very best as opposed to introducing grains. Grains are what's going to make it hard.
Okay, just do, maybe count my carbs or something like
that. No, just focus on meat and vegetables. If you Well, I know that's an oversimplification, but if you had a plate in front of you and you said, okay, let me tell you, can I tell you what flashed in my mind? If you were like a professional bodybuilder, you'd have like chicken breast without the skin and a plate of broccoli.
Sure.
That's what they do just to make sure that there's no extra carbohydrates at all.
Okay. All right, brother.
All right. All right. Hope that helps.
I'll be back in a few weeks.
All right. Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye.
You bet.
All right, I heard a report. I didn't look it up. I didn't try to find the resource, but the report on the news was doctors and nurses have just about had it with patients, and they just can't take it anymore. It is wearing them out. Do you know what's happening? They are becoming increasingly frustrated by patients asking two questions. Is there a natural way to heal my condition? And number two, how do you get to the root cause of this, or what's the root cause of my problem? And so those two ideas right there is, how do we heal this naturally? And of course, you know what that's implying. I don't want to take a drug or a pharmaceutical that's going to wreck my liver or my kidneys. I want something that's going to be safe for me, something that God made, you know, that has a long track record of actually being good for a human being. And how do we get to the root cause of it? Well, you know, I'm just kind of discussing this with you, but neither of those questions are offensive unless they are to you. How irritating. Anyway, okay. No, you're really right to do that. I mean, this is your body. God has given it to you. You want to know where you came from? Well, I'll tell you right now. You have a creator, and he made your body. There wasn't a big bang where there was an explosion of nothingness, and then poof, there you are magically. No, you have a creator. Which means this body that you've been given, it is a gift from God, and what an amazing gift it is. And so it's in your best interest. To you know what, you've got to, you know, you can say things to people that are true, but they've got to be willing to learn. Do you know what it's like to have such a simple solution to a person's problems, but they're not the least bit open to it? Oh, no. Mm-mm. So it helps if you have a great attitude that's open, where you can learn and you can grow. And really, who's the one that benefits from all this? You do. So learning to take good care of your body, wanting to... What if your body's not in great working order? Man, that would be so good if you could study it and be very curious and try to find out what's a natural way that I can get back into good working order. Now, I came across this article. It's about magnesium in the kidneys, and I thought, okay, I'm going to read that. Let me see, where's this come from? It was published in the Clinical Kidney Journal. Clinical Kidney Journal. The year 2025, that's this year, May the 13th, and I think it says Volume 6, if I got that wrong. Anyway, it's in the June edition, but that's when the article was published, in case you want to look it up. But here's the title. Oh, somebody's going to the phone line. Let's go ahead and take a phone call, and then I promise I'm going to come right back to magnesium in the kidneys and a few more points. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Morgan. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thanks for your phone call.
Yes, sir. I was just listening to you about, I missed the gentleman before talking about, you were talking about the doctor visits and the blood work, and I'm 59 years old and hadn't been to the doctor in about 5 years because of that very reason, that they never have answers for why your cholesterol is high, but you don't have any calcium scoring when you do a calcium scoring test.
Well, I'm sorry to correct you, but you're wrong about that. They do have an answer for why the cholesterol is high.
Well,
it's because you have a deficiency of a statin. Never mind. Go ahead. I'm just
joking.
Now, what were you saying about the calcium score test?
Well, I've had high cholesterol my whole life in the 300s since I was 18 when I first was tested.
Now, did you say the 300s?
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you.
And it's always just been my high LDL. Everything else has been great.
Okay.
And 10 years ago, I had a calcium scoring, and they couldn't find a trace of calcium. A trace.
But that's great. That's wonderful.
I know.
That means your calcium scoring test was basically a zero, right?
Exactly.
Oh, that's beautiful. That means your arteries are in great order. That's excellent.
So then with everything, because I'm 59, she was like, you've got to have bone density. You've got to have a calcium scoring. I'm like, I fall all the time, and I haven't broken a bone in my body ever.
That's because you were a tomboy when you were a little girl, right?
No, I was a ballerina.
Oh, well, you're a ballerina, but you're making a great point. That means you were very athletic, and you moved your body, and you did all these great things to make your bones strong, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I was just so frustrated by that, and then, you know, they don't discuss your blood work with you, and...
And that's real common.
And she wanted to put me on a statin, and I said, I'm not taking one. And then she wanted me to have all these...
Did you ask her why?
Vaccines. I just told her, no, I wasn't going to take one because I know what it does, the side effects of them.
Yeah, but did she give you, like, a very most excellent reason why she wanted you to take a statin?
Yes, to get my cholesterol down.
Okay, but that was her only reason, right?
That was the only reason.
Even though your calcium scoring test was, like, perfect?
Well, I haven't had one in 10 years.
Okay, but it was perfect 10 years ago, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
After 49 years, it was perfect.
I hate to interrupt you one more time. Can I give you just one tidbit of information?
Yes.
Okay, so your story is not different than, say, maybe a few other people that are listening right now. There's probably some other people that are listening to what you're saying, and they can just totally relate to everything that you're, like, fleshing out, and you're doing a very good job of communicating all this. And so I'm going to pose a question to you. What do you do when you have this super high level of cholesterol and all you do is get hammered away that you got to take drugs the rest of your life or you're going to die from heart disease. Well, I want to introduce a new idea to you.
Okay.
There's one particular unique lab test that I think is interesting. Now, I'm sorry, let me go back to the LDL cholesterol. There is a form of cholesterol, it's called type C. And so if they were to measure what's called LDL type C, which is that's the only one that they measure, so they do that on purpose. But the thing of it is, all the statin drugs, the only thing that they affect is the form of cholesterol called type C. But I'm going to suggest to you that the latest studies show that that's neutral, which means you can raise it, you can lower it. It doesn't make a lick of difference. I mean, it doesn't change the outcome. And so if you go online and ask the question, do statin drugs lower cholesterol? The answer is yes. Then you can ask the second question, which form of cholesterol do they lower? It's going to be called type C. Well, type C is not a problem. So what they're doing is they're providing a solution for something that's not even a problem. Number two, here's my real point I'm getting to. If you were to go to a website called ownyourlabs.com, you would scroll down, and I think there's a test that costs, I can't remember, maybe $17.16, I don't know. I'm just going to round it off to $17.50. But it's called Apolipoprotein B, or ApoB. Now, what they're doing is, so if your doctor's putting pressure on you to take all these drugs, and they're kind of giving you a guilt trip, you could always respond by saying, I think I'll just go to the lab, and I'm going to have them measure what's called my apolipoprotein B. When that one's elevated, now that's the one that causes problem. If you want to cause debris and gunk to build up in your arteries, the B type, the type B, that's the one that does it. Does that sort of make sense what I'm saying?
Yes. I actually had a Berkeley Heart Lab test done on my ApoE genotype.
Wow.
And back in 2010. And back then, from what I can read, it says B over A1 equals 0.65. That's a notation they made, but I can't really...
I guess what I'm suggesting, just to be simple, is they make a total measurement of what's called apolipoprotein B. And so when that becomes very elevated, then you can say, okay, now I know there's a process going on where I might be forming plaque in my arteries at a faster rate than what my body's able to remove it or scrub it clean. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I'm just trying to make it simple. So if you spent $17 and had that test done, then we would probably know the answer to some of your questions.
Okay. All right. So when I'm looking at this HDL or the LDL S3 GGE test.
I have no idea what that is.
This was the Berkeley Heart Lab.
But that was 15 years ago, right?
Yeah.
As in 15 years.
Yes. But my numbers haven't changed from 15 years ago.
How do you know that?
I mean, at one point, my LDL dropped down to about 260, and I have no idea what I did, but...
You probably started eating garlic.
300. Probably.
Your husband probably started cooking garlic or adding garlic to everything he made for you. Is that right?
Probably. I probably did that or psyllium because I read up on both of those as far as trying to lower cholesterol. But this test shows like large buoyant on a scale and then a slash mark and then it has small dent.
Well, the kind of the simple way to kind of get through this, the size of the cholesterol matters. And so, for example, they're not going to let me do this, but there's a form of a lipoprotein called VLDL. Basically, every lipid panel that's done, it has total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, but it also contains one called VLDL. And I know I'm trying to make it sound simple, but Dr. Linus Pauling would make the comment over and over again, when VLDL rises to 21 or above the number 21, that's when you actually start having plaque form in your the lining of your arteries at a faster rate, which means stiffness, calcification, you know, everything you don't want. You don't want your arteries rigid. And so you said HDL. Now, HDL, it is a very unique form of cholesterol, the high-density form of lipoprotein. It's not really cholesterol. Sorry, I misspoke on that. But when that number is 60 or a little bit above that, that's when your body starts removing plaque and gunk and debris from your arteries to keep them clean.
Okay. So, in fact, I did remember seeing on the HDL that on my last test on the 10th of June, I'm looking at my score on the HDL. It was higher than normal.
Well, what number are we talking about, though?
Let me see if I can search it on here.
Well, maybe I should just ask, what is the main question that you want to ask me today,
well,
or your main point?
I started taking the chiolic garlic.
Oh, okay. Well, cool.
And so I'm wondering, you know, how long should I test or look for something like that to work?
Well, when they give garlic to rats that have high cholesterol, it just takes around like 15 days to see an effect.
Okay.
It really does.
So my HDL was 73.
Okay, that's not necessarily a bad number. Now, when you start getting in the 80s and above, that's what you may see with different issues like autoimmunity. So if somebody had an HDL of like 100, I would say that would be one clue that autoimmunity may be something that's working in the body.
Because I've never had, I mean, it's never been out of the 60s, but this time it was higher than normal.
Well, and it may be that garlic played a profound role in that.
Oh, my LDL was only 216.
Well, what about, I just mentioned VLDL. What was the VLDL? The very low density lipoprotein.
I'm sorry, that was my LDL was 216.
That's not what I'm asking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's called V as in Victor, LDL.
I don't see one of those on here.
Okay, who did the test for you?
My primary care.
Well, they should have done that.
Yeah, there's nothing here on a VLDL.
Okay, well, they failed to do it then. We just missed an opportunity. So, what is the best way that I can help you?
Well, that's what I wanted to see, what your recommendation would be if I was taking garlic, and psyllium husk was another thing I was reading about. Is that another thing that, because of the fiber, would help with cholesterol?
Well, I'm gonna answer this probably in a different manner. There is a hormone in the human body called insulin.
Uh-huh.
Insulin seems to be the very hormone that drives the production of cholesterol. And so you can keep asking me questions like, well, what's behind that or what's under that? And I would say insulin. That's why when you have your fasting insulin levels tested, they need to be 5 or below. That would be more ideal. So when they're above 5, like the gentleman caller earlier that said his was like 8 or 9, I think it was 8, that would be a little bit higher, but he's so close to where he needs to be that it should be pretty easy to correct and fix.
Okay.
So there's a lot of moving parts, but no, I don't know any more than that.
Okay. I did misread this. My total cholesterol was 300. The triglycerides, 53.
Well, that's excellent on the triglycerides.
And LDL was 216.
Right. But
well,
I'm saying I don't know if,
that
but that's why I'm saying I don't know if any of that has any relevance toward anything except for the triglycerides. And the reason being is if all they're doing is measuring LDL and cholesterol type C or size C, it doesn't matter. You could have zillions of numbers. That's not the form that causes a problem. It's called type B. That's why I kind of cut to the chase and said, if you get the form called apolipoprotein B, it's a $17 test, You'll find out if you have too much of the B size. That's the one that causes problems.
Okay. That's so, what I'm going to go through.
Yeah, that would do it. And I would have them do a VLDL.
Okay. I wrote that down.
And you tell her I said so.
Okay, I will. I usually tell a lot of people that. You said so.
Well, thank you very much for your call today. I sure do appreciate you.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so the phone number here at the station, I have not given it out yet, is 903-589-8507. But if nobody wants to call and ask me a question, what I'll do is we'll jump straight into my magnesium topic. Okay, I came across this article that's all about kidney disease and people developing kidney disease and the kidneys becoming worse as you age. You know, let me ask you a question. How long do you need your kidneys to be in great working order? For your whole life. How about that? Man, I have seen so many people here recently where the kidney numbers were like just about the best that I've ever seen before. And a lot of times my job is involving tackling issues that are like things that are not right. Like if somebody had lots of severe pain in their knee or their foot, well, we have to kind of run toward that because that's their most immediate need. Are you with me on that? But, you know, when I see something really, really good, I need to remind myself, hey, Roy, you got to tell them that they're doing great in that department. Anyway, so this comes from the journal Clinical Kidney Journal, the year 2025. It was published May 13th, and it ran in the June edition, so this is July. So I'm going to say that's hot off the presses, so let me read this study to you. And you tell me if there's maybe anything in here that you find beneficial. So, American nephrologist, that would be the specialist that all he does or she does is focus on the kidneys. And they were affiliated with the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And this started in the year 1997 through 1998. The only people they allowed into this study, they had to be between 70 and 79 years old. All right. And the number you're probably curious is 3,075 Americans. The researchers, they looked at the relationship between dietary magnesium intake. And when I say dietary magnesium intake, that means the only way that they tried to evaluate the magnesium is where they were getting it from their food. So there's absolutely zero data here about magnesium supplementation. Of course, this is 1998. Maybe people really weren't into taking magnesium back then. I think they are so more so now. So they're just looking at how much magnesium are these people getting from the food that they're eating. Okay. So like for kicks, if you wanted to go onto Google right now and type in which foods are high in magnesium, you're going to come up with a whole bunch of different foods. And so here's the results right here. I cannot show you the graph that's in front of me. I kind of wish I could, but I can't. And so basically, about 25% of the people in the study, remember, 70 to 79 years old, they consumed more than 350 milligrams of magnesium a day. Now, that's kind of like that's just like the recommended daily allowance for a woman. If you're a man, it's a little bit more than that, like a little over 400. Of course, if you're outdoors all day long and you're sweating and you're working hard and you're really, really out there in the heat and you perspire a lot, well, you're going to need more magnesium than somebody that doesn't sweat all day long, because magnesium, in a roundabout way, is an electrolyte. And so they looked at another group of people that they were consuming maybe about 214 milligrams. That was their line they drew in the sand. People that got less than 214 milligrams and those that got 350 or more. So what they did was, when the American kidney experts or nephrologists compared the people getting 350 or more compared to those that were getting 214 milligrams or less, they did everything they could to remove any other influences or factors. And what they saw was that in the group with the highest intake of magnesium, the chance of developing chronic kidney disease was 33% lower than the group with the lowest intake. Well, to me, that's a big deal. So you got to have some confidence here from something. So we're learning together. If you take magnesium, that means you love your kidneys. Is there an explosion in America of people requiring and needing dialysis? Oh my goodness, yes. If I were guessing, maybe you should invest in kidney dialysis centers. I'm really just joking about that. It would be fine with me if, actually, it would be my preference that nobody required dialysis. That would be great, okay? I'm not going to shed a tear if they have to close down all the dialysis centers because they're no longer required because people are healthy. No, and you wouldn't either. Okay, so in addition, those in the fourth quartile, that means they got about 350 milligrams of magnesium or more. Have you ever heard of a number called GFR? That's an acronym for glomerular filtration rate. Well, theirs was 46% better than those that got the low magnesium. So what you can tell is there is a direct relationship between magnesium levels and, damage to the kidneys. For all I know, maybe magnesium does something to keep the kidneys in good working order. One thing that I typed into my phone a while ago, I wonder if I still have it on that. You know, I don't think it hurts to ask questions. But from this one right here, I typed in the question, does magnesium increase oxygen saturation? Because I just had it from my memory. And according to a study published by the National Institutes of Health, basically what they're saying is, and I know I'm going to make this a little bit complicated, but just kind of hear me out, because I think the better you understand this, it's going to enable you to make a much better decision about what to do with your health or some things that might be in your best interest. But you've got to have a certain amount of magnesium to hold oxygen in your tissues. And all I'm saying is, you are definitely better off with more oxygen as opposed to less oxygen. Have you ever heard the phrase acid, the word acid or the word alkaline? Well, what you want is your blood is supposed to be slightly alkaline. That means the pH of your body, everything works so much better. Your immune system's happier. You have much better blood flow. Oxygen is alkaline. You tell me, are you better off with less oxygen saturation or more? Well, the answer is more. And that's what magnesium does. Now, listen to this right here. Let me kind of switch gears. I'm back to the kidneys again. The experts here write, as kidney function begins to deteriorate, and this is I just learned this a while ago. I did not know this, but I'm just like you. Boy, look at the things we get to learn today. And so they have a new substance they're measuring in the blood. It's called fibroblast growth factor 23. I know that's a handful right there. But they're saying as a person's kidneys, as they begin to deteriorate and they worsen, and your kidney function is just failing you, then what they find is you got a lot more of fibroblast growth factor 23. So if I say it in reverse, the lower that your fibroblast growth factor 23, the greater the protection you have for the kidneys. And that's based on magnesium intake. So you can see magnesium is really your friend. So when you have what I would call the Goldilocks just right amount of magnesium or optimal, you've got a much greater chance of things working very well. See, if I got a text, let's just say I received a text from a group at church where they talk about you need to pray for this person, or they're just kind of keeping you update. I just always think this is not as complicated as it should be. When somebody has been sick for a long time, and the doctors over and over do blood tests, and it demonstrates that their magnesium levels are low, and the other electrolytes are low, like sodium and potassium and chloride and calcium, and the doctors just say, we're going to have to run more tests. This is just such a huge mystery. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, this doesn't have to be that complicated. God has designed your body to hold minerals in the cells and also outside the cells. And when you have less than what you need, then your battery is not going to hold an electrical charge. It's not. Nothing's going to work right. I mean, I kind of get to see this in the real world all the time. But if a person is, and I'm just using magnesium as my example, oh my goodness, you can just about completely turn around their ability for their body to produce energy. Now, I know this is my analogy, but do you remember when you were a kid, when you would pull up to the gas station and fill up with gas? And maybe they did this more back then, at least maybe that's what I think. People would pop the hoods of their car, and as they were filling up with gas, they said, you know what, this is an opportunity, let me check everything else while I'm here. And so I know that because we used to have a lakeside grocery store when I was a little boy, so people would pop the hood. What do you think they would do if they pulled the dipstick out of their engine and it was like 2 quarts low? Well, they would come into the store and buy 2 quarts of oil, put it in there. But the other thing that people used to do all the time is they would look at their batteries. And so, I know batteries are sealed now, but a long time ago when I was a kid, back in the early 60s, they used to have caps on the top of them. And it usually was like in a row of 3, or 3 cells per cap. Well, they would pop it. And if one of them was low in water, well, they would say, you know, I may not want to get stranded on the side of the road because my car won't start or I lose my charge. But they would make sure that the individual battery cells held enough water. Well, if I suggest to you that every cell in your body is like a battery, it's supposed to produce 3.9 volts of electricity. And folks, if you don't have enough potassium, if you don't have enough sodium, if you're lacking chloride or magnesium or calcium, your batteries are going to be exhausted. They're going to be, 10% charge instead of 100% charge. And so when I get all these texts about people having low electrolytes and the doctors can't figure out what's going on, I keep thinking, why don't they just simply improve the electrolytes? That's called Redmond sea salt. That's called eating foods that actually have nutrients in them. If I had to choose one way to strip, actually, I'm going to choose 3 ways right now. See there? I already had 3 to it when I said 1. So, there's a type of thought process called inverse or invert thinking. I think it's interesting. So, let's say it a different way. If I want to take a really, really healthy person, and I wanted to wreck them where they had no energy, and their body was totally exhausted, and for some strange reason, nobody could figure out how to get them back in good working order again, I would say, how would I get them to a bad state? Well, I would just have them eat the typical American diet. But here's my 3 points. If you want to wreck yourself, you should drink lots of soda water. Okay? I know there's a lot of people. They ain't going to listen to a thing that I'm saying about that. They're going to use as much artificial sugar as they can. They're going to drink as many Cokes or Pepsis, and they're just going to say, you know what, my doctor didn't tell me not to do this, so I don't think I will. So if you want to destroy your electrolyte levels, if you want to destroy your magnesium levels and become very depleted, just drink soft drinks. Or worse, drink energy drinks. I don't care if it is called Alani. If you want to wreck your health, drink carbonated beverages, energy drinks, and drink alcohol. You're going to get there pretty quick because all those things, they cause your body to lose these precious electrolytes at a faster rate than probably anything else possible. Yeah. So if you want to drink a Red Bull, you can. This is America. You can do whatever you want. God's given you a free will. But if you do, you're going to start dumping and losing all this precious magnesium. See, what I think is, you need that magnesium. You don't need to lose it, because if you have it, your body can start generating energy. This is not rocket science. If you want to be radiant and strong and healthy, you've got to have a certain amount of ability to make energy. I mean, I think I've said this about 30 zillion times, but the currency of the body is energy. Without energy, how is it possible for your body to right the ship, or to correct any damage, or to heal the body, or to keep your cells in great working order? Did I go off on that topic? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
You were mentioning about the magnesium. What kind of magnesium and how much should we be taking?
Well,
I have problems with my kidneys and everything. And I started taking the half a teaspoon of baking soda, and I was wondering about the science of that, and you answered that today, is to make my body more alkaline.
There you go. Good job. I didn't bring that up. You just did.
Right. And how long does it take for that? Then I'd have to keep taking it to keep my body alkaline. And how long would it take before it shows up in my blood work for the GFR?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts to this. Let's go back to what you first said about the magnesium.
Yes, sir.
I quite didn't get to that topic, but in this particular study that I'm reading, all they did was they looked at magnesium that was in foods. And so, for example, you do get magnesium when you eat things like salmon. Do you like to eat salmon?
No.
Oh, ma'am, I can't believe... Oh, goodness.
Despise it to the child.
Oh, this is going so poorly.
I'm going to look up and see what foods have the high...
Well, can I cut to the chase and just give it to you?
Yes, sir.
I looked at the top 20 foods, and the number one food on the list, I don't know, you may shoot this one down too, was kidney beans.
No, that's fine.
And I thought, okay, that is hilarious.
That's funny. Yeah.
The very thing that looks like a kidney and is the same color as a kidney is the very thing that helps the kidney. but kidney beans, a cup of them had like 200. Hang on, I wrote it down right here because I was so impressed by it. Oh, this came from Renner's World. But 258 milligrams per cup of kidney beans. And I thought, oh my goodness, that is amazing. It's probably so good for the kidneys also.
Well, quick question with that, because they're always cautioning me about having too much protein at one time. Like my doctor, when I lost when he took my kidney out, the surgeon said, do not have any protein drinks, which I don't, normally drink anyway.
Does this mean you only have one kidney?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm with you now. So, but if we're talking about kidney beans, you don't have to worry about protein with that. I think what they meant was a concentrate source like whey protein from a protein drink.
Okay, because it's there's nothing to digest. It's like having a sugar versus white sugar versus a drink of orange juice or something.
Yeah, but if you were, and I do think your kidney doctor is right about that. I think you've got to be careful about how much protein that you take in. So, like in your case, you might just eat two eggs instead of eating six. Does that make sense?
I always try to just do one at a time.
The other problem you have is if you don't get enough protein, your body starts eating itself and your body starts breaking down. So you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. You're going to have enough protein, just not too much.
Right. I try to get to 46 grams a day.
Okay.
And everything. But
well, if you just eat one egg, that's about 6.5 grams. So
Okay. That's
about a ninth of the way there, give or take.
I try to be careful. So you think it would be safe to have two eggs at a time.
So you asked me a question. How long does it take before you see a difference? And you asked me about the forms of magnesium.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So let's talk about three or four different ways that we might want to approach this. Number one, the kidneys, they seem to require a certain amount of blood flow in order for them to rejuvenate or to heal. When I said kidneys, I did say that plural. I know yours is singular. I forgot about that. You didn't take offense to that, did you, that I forgot already?
No.
Okay, so your remaining kidney, what you want to think of is there's got to be a certain amount of blood flow in order to give the kidney a chance to work right. So you already know what I'm saying.
Do not
lay on the couch all day long eating bonbons and watching soap operas. So when you exercise, and it may take, because you have one kidney, you may have to exercise, like go for a walk or something like that briskly for at least an hour a day just to give it a chance to work right. 10 minutes probably wouldn't be enough. Does that make sense?
Yes. They were telling me, like, I needed to have at least, when I was getting over some surgeries and said, you know, they said you should have at least half an hour a day.
That's different if you're getting over a surgery. I don't expect you to be in tip-top shape. It takes a while to get your strength back from a surgery.
Well, it's been long enough now. It was September of last year.
Well, so, you're getting better, aren't you?
Yes, sir. And I guess I had COVID earlier this year.
So, all right. So we know. Oh, well, rats, I hate you had that. Okay, so you've got those things working right for you. Another thing, and this is, you've already beat me to the punch about baking soda. I think that's brilliant. You're such a smart cookie.
Oh, but, no, I heard it from you.
Oh.
You're a smart cookie. Yeah, that's why I knew about it, because I heard it.
I thought I heard you talk about it first. Okay,
well,
so
yeah,
point.
But someone called in and you told him to take that.
Point.
And then I called back another day and I just had the one kidney, and you said, well, that's fine, just, you know, you still take that.
Okay, good job. Well, look at you. See, you're teachable, you're putting it into action. That's what I call great faith. Way to go, woman. Okay, number three. This, you'll have to kind of take this with a grain of salt also, but if you will be willing to walk barefoot without your shoes on, outdoors, that has been shown to improve kidney function. Now, I don't know that I can explain how that really works, but God knows what he's doing. So if you walk barefoot without shoes on, you're helping your kidneys get better.
I'm sorry, I'm writing this down as I'm...
Yeah, just walk barefoot every chance you get.
Okay.
Are you going to church tomorrow morning?
No.
Okay, are you going to church today?
Well, I observe the Seventh-day Sabbath. I'm a Christian who observes the Seventh-day Sabbath.
Well,
yes.
You can just tell them when you show up today barefooted that Dr. Morgan said so.
Okay, so barefoot in the house is better too, or...
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I normally wear those, like, the little things with treads, you know. I have to wear support hose because of support socks because of varicose veins.
Well, what I would do is, now that you told me that, I would really look into a flavonoid compound called rutin, R-U-T-I-N.
Oh, yes. I wrote that down from last time I heard you talk, and And
man, you're like a great student. I can't even tell you anything new. But if you start taking enough rutin, it will have an amazing benefit on helping to rejuvenate those veins. The next thing that I really want to sell you on, it's called doing deep squats every day. You can do those barefoot in your house, on the floor. But if your hips become stronger, that's going to strengthen your kidney function.
Oh, wow.
So you can go to YouTube and type in hip mobility exercises, examples of a deep squat. It's just where you hold a deep squat, but it's very interesting. I've seen some interesting research on that. And so, supplements of magnesium. There was a study that came from Czechoslovakia, and they used what's called magnesium lactate. Magnesium lactate works really, really well because your body just has to move one ion, one chemical reaction, for it to go right into the cell. Okay.
Okay. I've been taking I started taking magnesium citrate, but you said that magnesium lactate is the best.
Well, I'm just giving you some ideas. Another one, I have many people that do very, very well with magnesium glycinate. And so those may be my two top choices. But now can I go back to kidney beans just for a brief second? I'm not going to beat the topic to death, but kidney beans. The plant, or the kidney bean plant itself, it has this amazing ability at taking magnesium from the soil and converting it into one that's bioavailable for human organisms. That's you and me. And so when you get it from a food, it's like almost twice as good than getting it from the best supplement.
Okay, I'm going to write that down too, because I was looking at that. I was very encouraged because, like, as you mentioned, I have to get my protein in. Like, I just saw the nephrologist yesterday, and I told her this is going to. I hope you won't be offended by this, but I told her I'm a lacto-ovo-vegetarian, so I have to be very careful how to make sure I get my complete proteins. So
I'm not offended by that. That's your choice.
Okay, but I mean, I know you're big one, you know, meats and things.
Oh, I would have no problem recommending anybody eat fish. I mean, if you want to really have radiant health.
Right. Oh, yeah, I do eat fish sometimes, and sometimes I, you know, we'll succumb to a little bit of chicken, but mostly, or, you know, like turkey Thanksgiving.
I heard what you said. I succumb to the temptation of chicken.
Well, if you knew what kind it was, it's like if I'm at someplace out and my son is eating deep fried chicken strips, you know,
Oh my! Get behind me, Satan!
Those are bad. But you know,
I know what you mean. Yeah,
Thanksgiving. I mean, I have that sometimes, but I mean, then that's good. I can sit down and eat, like, rather than just a half a cup of beans. I have a lot of black beans.
Hey,
I can have a full cup.
Yeah, and black beans are good, too. Black beans are a great source of magnesium. I'm glad you brought that up. One point. When you went to the nephrologist, did he go over what your serum magnesium levels were?
The thing was, they did it. They kind of messed up, and they sent me in to see her before they took my lab work. And she had looked at some old lab work from another doctor that is maybe 6 months old or something. She said, your lab work looks pretty good, you know.
I don't have any idea what that really means.
Yeah, I don't either. So when they do more comprehensive lab work, kidney oriented, there than they do at my general practitioner. So I'm going to it's supposed to show up on my chart, you know, thing, that patient portal thing. So I'm going to look at it and go through that and
if I were you, you really need to request a serum magnesium, because all this other stuff is just theory, unless I can see your serum magnesium and know what it is. And so what I'm after is, you can, and so this is almost borderline ridiculous. Where is it? What do I do with it? Okay, here it is right here. I don't have this article in front of me, but basically the title of this article is Low Magnesium Levels Will Kill You. And what they do is they're just measuring magnesium level from the blood. So in the real world, we can talk about supplements. We can talk about what you're eating. There's a lot of moving parts with this, but at the end of the day, I really wish they would just measure your serum magnesium levels so we could find out what it is. Is it 1.9? Is it 2.2? Is it 2.5? I don't know. But your fortunes are going to rise and fall based on your magnesium levels.
Well, you mentioned two other tests earlier today, because the lady that was talking about the high cholesterol, I've always had high cholesterol. And I've been a vegetarian for ages. I'm not, you know, sucking down a bunch of I don't eat fried food.
You don't.
My oil is, you know, extra virgin olive oil and things like that. And I also have the flaxseed oil for the omega-3s and stuff. But my cholesterol has always been high, even before when I would eat, you know, animal fat, a lot of animal fat and things like that. I have very, very little dairy. But there was two other blood tests you mentioned earlier. I'm going to ask about those, too. So I appreciate you giving me this one.
You betcha. You're sure welcome. I think it's in your best interest to measure your serum magnesium, because we could talk about it, but what if yours is perfect already? I'm going to say, way to go. Good job.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be good. That would be great. Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Such a blessing to so many people.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, I don't know that I deserve all that, but you're so kind to say that. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a voice of reason. And like I said, they're always wanting to throw statins at me. And I'm going, like, my blood pressure, like I was taking yesterday, I think it was 136 over 73.
What's wrong with that?
I'm 76. I know. So I'm going, like, you know, I can't have a bunch of plaque in my arteries. I mean, it's been decades. I mean, since my 40s, I've had it, you know, like 250, you know.
I'm going to ask you a personal question. Are you by chance related to anybody super famous?
No.
I just thought maybe you would say George Washington or something like that.
Oh. Well, I did have two relatives from Germany who were both called, when they got here, George Washington. Weber, you know. So, I mean, that's the closest I got to, you know.
You know what? We're on the same wavelength today. Hey, thanks for your phone call. I really appreciate it a whole bunch.
God bless you, Doctor.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye. Oh, she's great. All right, the phone number here at the station or the radio or the program Health Essentials is 903-589-8507. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, this is I'd like to know what Lewy body dementia is.
Okay, so I think I mentioned it like a couple of weeks ago. They breed a group of rats for the very purpose, because they become senile real quick. And the reason why they do them is because after the rats are just very, very young, they start developing what's called beta amyloid plaque. And they also develop what are called tau proteins. And they also get a buildup of what are called Lewy bodies. And so I know this is my oversimplification, but if you had an electric wire in front of you, and there's a white wire and there is a black wire, and they were covered, I'm sorry, the plastic wrapper around the copper wire. You knew what I meant, didn't you?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. So would you like those two copper wires, you know, the hot wire and the neutral, would you like them to touch, you know, while you're in the bathtub? No, they would short out. And so when you get a buildup of Lewy bodies and you get a buildup of tau proteins and beta amyloid plaque, it causes your neurons of your brain to short circuit. And so we want to keep the brain clean. I know that's an oversimplification, but if you get a buildup of all this dirty debris in your brain, that's going to lead to dementia or Alzheimer's.
Yeah. What do you do to get help with it?
Okay, well, this is probably not relevant to you, but let me give it anyway. There was a study that came out maybe, I'm going to say a year and a half ago, and all they did was they looked at the occurrence of dementia and Alzheimer's in people that drink a Diet Coke every day or anything with artificial sugar in it. I think it was 400% higher compared to people that don't consume artificial sugar. So you already know what I'm saying. There are some things that can contribute to toxicity and damage to the brain or inflammation. Does that make sense?
Yes, uh-huh.
And so if a person were doing that, they would need to stop it immediately. Now, the article that I read a couple weeks ago, it only revolved around one topic. There's a type of a blue-green algae that is called spirulina. And they found it was very, very effective at helping to prevent the buildup of beta amyloid plaque and tau proteins. It did not specifically say Lewy bodies, but it's almost the same thing.
Okay.
Okay, so next point. Maybe as much as 67 to maybe 71% of all cases of Lewy body disease, they got to call it micro... Okay, let me say it differently. They call it small vessel disease. And what that means is the arteries and the blood flow that carries oxygen and nutrients to your brain cells, it's too small. That's because the arteries and the veins, they're too small. They cannot carry. You know, have you ever seen an athlete before that was just really physically fit? Let me just choose my example. Like a professional wrestler, veins are bulging. Well, they're getting plenty of blood flow to their muscles, but with Lewy body disease, you're not able to keep up with it. You can't get enough oxygen to the brain. And so basically, what happens to the brain when it's starving for oxygen and nutrition?
Okay. Yeah, it just don't work right.
Now, who are you referring to? Who's your example for Lewy body disease?
I have a brother-in-law that is getting it and... has it, and they've diagnosed him with it. And what we're wanting to know is what he could eat, if at his diet he could help with diet, or what he could take out of his diet maybe help him with it.
Yeah, no, that's a simple, straightforward question. Well, one of the terms they're using now when it comes to describe Alzheimer's is they call it type 3 diabetes, and what that means is you have insulin resistance and blood sugar problems in the brain. And when I say insulin resistance and blood sugar problems, I mean there's too much sugar. So obviously, cutting out the sugar is one of the first steps that a person can take if they're trying to help themselves. Now, if the sugar is called a bowl of blueberries or strawberries or raspberries, that's a whole different ball of wax. Does that make sense?
Yes, I have.
But you realize how challenging it is if a person has advanced Lewy body disease, how easy it is for them to do nothing, because they have no ambition, they have no motivation. It's not like your brother-in-law is saying, can I go for a 2-mile hike with my favorite brother-in-law Randy today, or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yes, uh-huh.
I mean, so most likely he doesn't have the best habits, or does he have the best habits?
We don't know. We live 6 hours from him, but we've been just communicating, and every time we see him, we see a downward spiral.
Does he drink alcohol?
No.
Did he drink a lot in the past?
No.
Okay. I know you want to help him, but this is a tough, tough deal, because most likely he's going to be the sum total of a lifetime of poor habits. I could be wrong about that. I mean, what did he do for a living?
Well, for a while he was a truck driver, over-the-road truck driver. So,
you see the point that I'm getting to. He's just super, super sedentary.
Yeah.
And so your capillary beds and your blood vessels, they just become smaller and smaller and smaller when you have a job like that. It's one of the hardest jobs of all time.
Okay.
I would recommend he become like you. Walk 20 miles a day going back and forth to work. But it's so hard, because what do you tell a person? You need to start walking 5 miles a day? Is he able to walk 5 miles a day?
No.
Okay, why not?
His physical is really down right now.
No.
He's lost a lot of weight. And
so is he kind of wasting away into nothingness and losing his strength?
Yes, he is.
And maybe that's my next point. This is just one more way to prove that he just does not have enough blood flow to nourish his body. He's just severely, his circulation is just very, very poor. He's just losing his, and see, that's the problem with this, and that's what I was trying to explain to the woman earlier. It takes energy to make everything work right, and without energy and oxygen, it's just nearly impossible. I don't want to be like a Debbie Downer on the radio, and you're asking a great thing. You love him, you're concerned about him, but how do we get him to have faith and say, I'm going to start lifting weights every day and exercising and walking? How's that going to go?
Well, we can try.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there you go.
We can try and pray. That's all we can do.
Well, let's tell him that he needs to be walking for at least 2 hours a day and lifting weights for an hour a day. Because what that would do is that would stimulate the body to start growing new arteries and new nerves and new blood vessels, and the brain would actually have a reason to grow. But if you're sitting down all day long and you're weak, there's no reason for your brain to fix anything. You got to give it a reason.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good day, buddy. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
I hope I did not come across as overly negative, but that's just the truth of it. If you have a person that's been a truck driver for 40 years and they've kind of gotten into that slump and they're stuck, and they get home and they just want to sit around and watch television or something like that. I don't know if that's the case, but I mean, I've heard enough stories over the last 36 years. I think I can kind of like connect the dots on some people. But if he's physically weak, if he's lost his strength, I don't know what can be done to stop the Lewy body disease, unless we could do something radically different. Maybe he could pretend he's a little kid and he could play on the playground every day, in the slide, in the merry-go-round, and he could run and play soccer with his grandkids. I don't know, something, but you got to get the body moving. Without oxygen and nutrients to the brain, how could the brain repair itself? You're going to tell me there's a new drug that fixes that? Well, that's called baloney. That's not going to happen. Anyway, my name is Dr. Morgan. This program is Health Essentials. You're listening to KBJS FM 90.3 Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.